This is Focus West Michigan for Friday, July 10, 2026. I'm Joe Bilecki with your local news. West Michigan counties are now experiencing the outbreak of intestinal illness spreading across the state, WGVU's Dee Morrison reports.
More than 1,500 cases of cyclosporiasis have been reported in Michigan since June 22nd. 44 people have been hospitalized, and health officials are working to find the source of the outbreak. The intestinal illness is caused by the Cyclospora parasite. People become infected by consuming contaminated fresh produce or water. The outbreak first hit southeast and mid-Michigan hard, but is spreading across the state, with Kent County reporting 10 cases, Muskegon 25, Ottawa 15, and Allegan 2 as of Friday morning.
Of course, those numbers are very fluid, and we're receiving more to investigate as the day goes on, and we anticipate that will continue.
That's Kent County Deputy Administrative Health Officer Carla Black. She says, wash hands before touching food, rinse fresh fruits and vegetables thoroughly under running water, and scrub firm produce like melons with a produce brush.
If you don't wash that off and then you use a knife to cut into the fruit, you're basically taking all the bad things that are on the outside and then putting it onto the parts that you eat.
Those who do become sick with ongoing gastrointestinal symptoms should contact their doctor.
Typically, when people get the stomach flu, they think, oh, it's only bad for like 1 or 2 days. With this, it could literally be weeks.
The infection can be treated with a round of antibiotics. I'm Dee Morrison.
President Trump has approved Governor Gretchen Whitmer's disaster assistance request for communities impacted by severe weather earlier this year. WGVU's David Limbaugh spoke with a FEMA representative about how residents can apply for the help they need.
Michiganders in 27 counties across the state are now eligible for FEMA assistance if you were affected by the catastrophic events between April 10th and April 21st of this year.
Daniel Bernardi is a public information officer with FEMA. He says regardless of the amount of damage, everyone should apply for assistance.
If you were negatively affected at all, or you're unsure, whether it be a sheet of drywall or your entire home, God forbid, come in and talk to us and let us help you determine what you may or may not be eligible for.
President Trump approved just over $32 million for recovery efforts. The disaster declaration opens the path to FEMA's individual assistance programs for 27 Michigan counties, as well as FEMA's public assistance program for 26 counties. Bernardi says applying early and with as much information as possible will help residents receive the best results.
Be overprepared, bring all you got, and we'll help you sort through everything. And you will be met with empathy with a dedicated team of people that want to help you.
The filing deadline for assistance is August 31st. You can apply online at disasterassistance.gov, calling 1-800-621-3362, or downloading the FEMA app. I'm David Limbaugh.
People with vision, hearing, or mobility challenges now have a new tool to help them travel through Grand Rapids' Gerald R. Ford International Airport. WGVU's Dee Morrison has more.
The Gerald R. Ford International Airport Authority is partnering with Good Maps, launching a smartphone app that helps passengers navigate the airport. It also offers an alert system paired with the airport central dispatch to guide people during an emergency. Good Maps' Christian Dospel demonstrated the app on site.
With no additional infrastructure required, we provide that turn-by-turn guidance through audio instructions, augmented reality visuals, and haptic feedback.
Taylor DeRusha with the Association of the Blind and Visually Impaired is a legally blind traveler. She's heard of Good Maps, but hasn't been able to use it anywhere in West Michigan until now.
Especially at a place like an airport, which is well known in the visual impairment community to be a scary thing to have to navigate.
After trying out a demo, DeRusha is excited about the possibilities.
Many of us really love to be independent. This allows that. We can feel just like a regular traveler. Coming in here and knowing that this is here, it makes me feel excited. It makes me want to plan a trip.
The Good Maps app is free to download on iOS and Android devices. I'm Dee Morrison.
New funding has been set aside to protect more of Kent County farmland from future development. WGVU's David Limbaugh tells us what that means for local farmers.
Kent County's Voluntary Purchase Development Rights, or PDR program, compensates owners of farmland for accepting a permanent deed restriction on their land that limits future development for non-agricultural purposes. To that end, the county has been awarded two state and federal grants worth nearly $376,000 to help preserve 218 acres of farmland in Tyrone and Solon townships. Since its inception in 2002, the county has preserved approximately 3,000 acres of active farmland across nearly 30 individual properties. Local farmers markets, like the Grand Rapids Downtown Market and the Fulton Street Farmers Market, account for over $231 million in market value from farming annually, generating $95 million in economic impact. According to the USDA Economic Research Service, in 2024, farmers earned an average of 11.8 cents of every dollar spent on domestically produced food sold at grocery stores and restaurants combined, with the remaining 88.2 cents absorbed by off-farm costs, including processing, marketing, and distribution. I'm David Limbaugh.
Coming up soon, WGVU's Scott Vanderwerf has the preview of this weekend's new films, but first, news from around the state. Bills to create a state tax credit to spur the development of more affordable housing in Michigan are on their way to Governor Gretchen Whitmer. The bipartisan bills were adopted last week before the legislature began its summer break. We have more from Rick Pluta.
The bills would work in tandem with a federal tax credit to spur construction of affordable housing. Democratic State Senator Jeff Irwin chairs the Senate Housing and Human Services Committee. He says this is one step of many that are needed to alleviate the affordable housing shortage.
These units have to be planned, have to be built, so it's going to take a couple of years before we're going to start to see units come online. But we got to start planning now if we want to build them tomorrow.
The bills also include bonus incentives for using building materials that are made in Michigan. Governor Whitmer has endorsed the concept of using tax credits for affordable housing. I'm Rick Pluta.
Congressman John James remained the top target for his Republican primary opponents on Thursday night's debate in the race for governor. Colin Jackson has more.
James, the President Trump-endorsed frontrunner, faced attacks for his business record and for losing two U.S. Senate campaigns before winning his U.S. House seat. James says he tried to keep attention on the issues during the debate.
We're talking about affordability. We're talking about things like protecting health care, patient zero price tax, protecting Medicaid, making sure that we do more to protect and invest in mental health issues.
His opponents, former Attorney General Mike Cox and businessman Perry Johnson, repeatedly called for the elimination of the state income tax as a top policy goal. James also called for lower income taxes. Both highlighted their own records while holding public office and running consulting firms while pitching themselves to voters. I'm Colin Jackson in Grand Rapids.
Focus West Michigan is brought to you by listeners like you. To support this show and everything we do here, visit WGVUnews.org and click the donate button. And for a weekly dose of news right to your inbox, sign up for the WGVU newsletter. Disney has released a live-action version of their hit 2016 animated film Moana. Olivia Wilde directs The Invite with Seth Rogen, Penelope Cruz, and Edward Norton. And Evil Dead Burn continues the popular horror franchise. Those movies and more from WGVU Scott Vanderwerf and Zach Rigetti from Studio C on our weekly movie talk.
And now Disney are returning to the world of Moana after the two very successful animated films. They've got a live action version of Moana. And Zach, what are you hearing about this particular version?
Yeah, I mean, here we are. We're back, and like Disney is continuing to remake their animated films into live action. The interesting thing about this one is that the original Moana movie only released in 2016. And we also, a year and a half ago in 2024, got Moana 2. So it just feels very rushed and fast that we're bringing Moana to the live action screen before we bring sort of some of the other Disney classics, onto the screen. And I think that might be how some people are sort of feeling about this. It is really interesting because, you know, up until this point, all of the live actions that they have brought back on screen are those Disney classics. You've got The Little Mermaid, you've got Dumbo, The Lion King, Cinderella, Beauty and the Beast. And so to have sort of like, this is genuinely the first Disney movie that has like sort of the newer animation, style that is now a live action film. So that being said, it seems like there's also no difference between the 2016 Moana and this live action one. So you're pretty much getting a shot for shot remake, which is what all of the Disney live actions have been. But there's a lot of, history and sort of like memories with the old animated films versus sort of this new one.
Well, the Snow White one kind of laid an egg, right? That was a big flop for Disney.
It was.
Which is Disney doesn't, they don't have big, huge cataclysmic failures, and that was one.
Yeah, they tend not to. And I mean, the other, you know, you look at Lilo and Stitch, which was also last year, and how fantastic that movie was. And there's a lot of people who love Stitch and have memories, you know, growing up watching the animated film. And so, yeah, I think it's definitely in an interesting space. You know, like, critics don't love this film, but I don't know if it's because basically the fact that it's just a remake shot for shot, or, you know, it doesn't do anything new, or it was just made too soon after the animated film. But Dwayne The Rock Johnson is back playing Maui, who, you know, he voices Maui in the animated films and now is playing Maui in the live action. There's been like articles and conversation around sort of like what Dwayne Johnson looks like as Maui in the live action. But like, that's the thing, right? Is like, when you have an animated film, there, like Maui in the animated films, the body proportions are just, you know, sort of all out of whack because it's an animated film. And there are just certain things like that that don't translate to live action movies. It's similar to, I've been talking about K-pop Demon Hunters in the same conversation, because, you know, K-pop Demon Hunters opened last year. The directors spent 6 years making it, and immediately, like, Netflix wanted to turn it into a live-action film. And they've gone on record and saying things of, like, there are certain parts to this animation style that makes K-pop Demon Hunters what it is that doesn't translate to live-action, and you can't translate it. And so I think that's sort of, like, the fun little aspects of live-action, sort of the quirks of it, too, is, like, what can you translate? What makes sense? And how does it feel when you're just watching sort of Dwayne The Rock Johnson play Maui in the live action version?
And we also have a film that's directed by actress Olivia Wilde called The Invite, and she stars in it with Seth Rogen as her husband. And it's an invitation between neighbors, and the neighbors are Edward Norton and Penelope Cruz. And I've seen the preview for this several times, and this has gotten a lot of critical acclaim so far in terms of the reviews that I've seen. Have you had an opportunity to see it? And if not, what are you hearing about this, Zach?
Yeah, I haven't seen it yet. I'm really excited to go sit and watch this one. It's 96% certified fresh on Rotten Tomatoes. And yes, from what I'm hearing, everyone, both critics and audiences that are walking into this movie, are walking out feeling like they loved it. But also, I feel like you're going to leave feeling maybe weird. Like, as you said, Seth Rogen and Olivia Wilde are married in this movie, and they're sort of walking through, their marriage is a little bit on thin ice. And she invites the upstairs neighbors, Edward Norton and Penelope Cruz, over for dinner. Seth Rogen's character sort of doesn't know that, gets home from work, and, you know, sort of like begins to unravel right from the very beginning. And it feels like one of those films where, you know, it's only going to be 90 minutes to an hour, and you're going to sit down, and it's going to only take you 10 to 20 minutes before the balls are already rolling. And so, yeah, what goes on and transpires over the night will be interesting to see, but it's going to be a fun wild ride.
And also, Evil Dead Burn, returning to the realm of the Evil Dead, which it has a Michigan origin. Sam Raimi, the director of the original film, and is one of the executive producers of this film, is from Michigan, along with Bruce Campbell, of course, who's become very famous as a campy actor over the years because of his role in the first three Evil Dead films, and then also, of course, the Evil Dead TV show. And so Evil Dead Burn is now what? This is the...
I believe this is the sixth or seventh in the franchise.
But also there was a sequel just within the last year or so as well.
Correct. Yeah. Evil Dead Rise, which I keep mixing up between this one and Evil Dead Burn. But yeah, this one should be, Evil Dead Burn should basically somewhat connect to Evil Dead Rise as it also exists within the world of Evil Dead. And I think there's going to be also a lot of references in this one to some of the things from The Evil Dead, the original from Sam Raimi, and also Evil Dead 2. I think there's going to be a few callbacks and things throughout, you know. And I think that's sort of the thing about these movies that people love, right, is the universe in which Sam Raimi created, and sort of, you know, the Book of the Dead, and how those sort of, the deities and things that take over and possess people, and how they interact with the people that they know and love. Like, you know what you're going to get at an Evil Dead movie, but it never disappoints you. And I think this one is going to basically give you the exact same thing. So it follows this woman named Alice, who her husband tragically dies, and sort of in mourning and reconciling, she gets together with her in-laws, all of his family, and things like pretty much spiral from there. There's going to be, you know, again, a cabin in the middle of nowhere type of vibes. But from what we saw at CinemaCon, from what I've seen from the trailers, I mean, there's going to be, it feels like it's just one of those things of like with Evil Dead, and like we love the cult classic version of it too, but like the modern filmmaking that like you have the ability to sort of like stretch what Sam Raimi originally created. And I think that's like some of the fun parts to, you know, the newer versions of this movie and franchise.
And to remind our listeners, Evil Dead actually did not have any distribution. And then Stephen King, in an issue of Twilight Zone magazine, wrote a review of it after seeing it at a festival. And he said, "This is the greatest horror movie I've ever seen." And on the word of Stephen King, it got a distribution deal. And I saw it in its original run at the now, you know, closed Alpine Theater on Alpine Avenue. The Evil Dead, back in the 1980s. Also, we've got, speaking of like 80s, 90s vibes, we have this erotic film called Night Nurse.
Yeah, just this, it played at Sundance this year. IFC picked it up after that. It's sort of this this woman who gets a new job at sort of this like luxury retirement community. And there's Douglas, which is one of her patients, and is sort of like, you know, potentially doesn't, you know, who loose cannon almost, and he actually kind of loops her into sort of scam calling other like elderly people into, you know, basically sending them tons and millions of dollars. And then so it sort of spirals from there. There's a little bit of love interest. It's all mixed together, and you know, you get sort of blurred lines.
And then very briefly, in the minute we have left, we've got Gail Daughtry and the Celebrity Sex Pass with a big all-star cast.
I'm excited for this one. Long story short is her and her boyfriend have had the conversation about if you meet your celebrity crush, you basically have a hall pass with said celebrity crush. And her boyfriend met his celebrity crush and slept with said celebrity crush. She goes and sees a psychic. And the only thing that the psychic proposes is that she must find her celebrity crush and sleep with them. And so she says, "So you're telling me the only way to fix my relationship is to find John Hamm and sleep with him?" And she says, "Yes." And she gets with all her friends and goes on an amazing road trip. And I am excited for this one.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us, Zach. And next week we'll be able to talk about The Odyssey.
Thanks, Scott.
This has been Focus West Michigan from WGVU for Friday, July 10, 2026. I'm Joe Bilecki. Our audio operations manager is Rick Bierling, and our news and public affairs director is Patrick Center. Don't forget to like and subscribe, and we'll be back with more news and events in West Michigan on Monday. Thanks for listening.